Spring has sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards. Save big money
at Menards. They say that 99.9% of the internet is not accessible to traditional browsers. The world that lives beneath what we see when we visit the dark web contains things which defy normal understanding. It has become a breeding ground to all of man's most perverse and dark fantasies. It's a place where chaos reigns supreme. My mother is not an extremely savvy internet user. In fact, most of the time she has little to no idea what she's doing on there. If she is in someone else's YouTube account or Gmail, she often does what she is trying to do without paying attention to whose credentials she is using. Can you blame her, though? Her generation didn't grow up with computers. They are seriously disadvantaged when it comes to that kind of stuff. I, on the other hand, somewhat pride myself on being knowledgeable about computers and the internet. I don't know how I would live my life without the opportunities it affords me. One could easily assume that I would be someone who would take an interest in the dark web. And believe me, it's not for the faint of heart. Now the thing is that I am very careful with what I do. I use a great VPN service, and I know what I can and can't click on in order not to expose my IP address to anyone. After years of doing this, though, I did, however, become a bit too careless, and it just so happens that the time I did, I was on my mom's computer. I was hanging with my family during the holidays, and I got into an argument with my little brother Tommy about a certain listing that I had seen on a dark net market search. He's always been a bit of a sheltered kid, considering he has a cleft lip and my parents baby him like a toddler. So I figured it was my responsibility to show him some of the real world every once in a while. I had told him about this listing for a clown that you could hire for birthday parties that was, for some reason, being advertised on the dark web, and he, of course, didn't believe me. So I showed him the listing, and we read about how the clown would provide your party with an exceptional experience, one that you would likely never forget. Considering my knowledge of the dark web, I was pretty sure it was not an experience you would want to remember. After I showed him, I got distracted and went about my business doing other things. Somehow, though, I left my browser window open on my mom's computer. This was hands down the most careless slip-up of my life, one that I will likely never live down. After I was done on there, she used the laptop and, thinking that the clown was something my little brother wanted to do for his birthday, she went ahead and paid for him to come visit the house. After I found out what she had done, we tried to cancel it, but I guess it didn't work because that weekend a clown car pulled up out front of our house for Tommy's birthday. Out of the car stepped an old man in traditional clown makeup with these pale, bluish, white eyes like those of a blind person. Yet, he seemed to be able to walk up the driveway totally fine. My mom was very freaked out and had my dad go meet him in the driveway. When my dad approached him, he tried to shake his hand, but instead, the clown just immediately pulled out three juggling balls and started tossing them up effortlessly. My dad stared at him for a moment in awe, then began to guide him around the side yard into the back where the rest of the party guests were. I was definitely a bit worried, so I went to the backyard and the clown was already setting up for a magic show. The guy looked freaky as hell, but everyone in the crowd seemed okay with it, so I supposed I was being too judgmental and should just let him do his show. Plus, he had a name tag that said Noisy. And considering that he hadn't said a word the whole time, I thought that was pretty funny. For the first trick, Noisy took out a quarter and he pretended like it disappeared in his hand. Then, he reached around the back of his head and pulled the quarter out from behind his ear. It was a pretty basic trick, but he kept going with it. He pulled out quarter after quarter from behind his ear until there was a pile of change at least a few inches high on the ground beside him. Everyone in the yard seemed impressed when they saw this. It was really an incredible trick. Then he picked up the pile of change off the ground and put it in his shirt. Then he held the shirt up with his two fingers and launched the coins up into the air. Only nothing flew out. The change had totally disappeared, and in its place, a bunny rabbit popped out. The crowd really got into this. A few of them even got up and started putting money into his tip jar. Then, Noisy extended his hand and pointed to Tommy. Tommy smiled, excited to have been acknowledged, and stepped up. Noisy then pulled out one of those huge bubble-making wands and had Tommy stand in this round tray of soap on the ground. Noisy then lowered the wand over Tommy and lifted it back up quickly and covered him in a gigantic bubble. This was not an ordinary bubble, though. It would not pop no matter what. Tommy would hit the side of it and it wouldn't break. Everyone in the audience stared at this speechless. Clearly, they were watching something that wasn't possible occurring before their eyes. After a few seconds of being trapped inside, Tommy started to freak out and thrash against the side of the bubble. He began screaming and crying, panicking. "Hey, let him out!" my dad yelled as he started approaching the clown. Noisy then looked over at him and put his fingers to his lips, shushing him. He then lifted the wand up above my brother's head and quickly brought it down over him. The bubble instantly disappeared, and so did Tommy. Frantic, my dad charged Noisy, but just before he could get to him, the clown brought the bubble wand down over himself and vanished as well. My dad screamed frantically, looking all over for the two of them. Realizing the gravity of the situation, the crowd began to stand up and try to help my dad look for them. Then, we heard a car start up in the driveway. Several of us sprinted to the front yard and saw the clown car pulling out and taking off down the street. My dad and I, along with several others, got into our cars and peeled out, chasing after him. Then, the clown car turned a corner, and by the time we got there, it had vanished. Upon the realization that we had lost him, my dad immediately broke down in tears, screaming and pounding on the steering wheel. I had never seen him get like that before, and I knew it was my fault. The following weeks were some of the worst I had ever experienced. Constant contact with the police and interviews, where everyone was relentlessly asking me about why I was on the dark web and what I knew about my little brother's disappearance. I honestly feel like I was lucky they didn't pin the entire thing on me and just close the case. I didn't stop going on the dark web, though. In fact, I started using it more. I knew that if there was any way I was going to find my brother's kidnapper, it wasn't going to be using the old-fashioned police detective model. I had to track Noisy down once he decided to stalk again. So I created various fake identities on numerous dark net markets and made posting after posting for birthday party clowns to come perform at my son's party. Then, finally, after several weeks of doing this, I got a response. Only it wasn't from Noisy. It was from another old man dressed as a clown who included a picture of himself in the posting with his response. The weirdest thing was, the old man had a cleft lip and looked just like my little brother. Only he had aged at least 50 years. I was really freaked out by this and had to know more. But after I posted several times for him to meet me, I think he could tell I was trying to trick him, because he would never show up. I am going to continue to look for him as long as I can, but I think he knows it's me, and for some reason, he doesn't want to be found.
Some people have a normal job. Monday through Friday, 40 hours a week, health benefits, bonuses each year, retirement funds. Well, not me. I don't have a normal job. It's not easy doing what I do, but it pays the bill since I can't get a regular job due to my criminal record. I'm a janitor that works for the dark web, and I clean up murder rooms once the buyers are done torturing and killing the victims they paid for. I've been doing it for the past 3 years. Every time someone needs help cleaning up the bloody mess they made, I go in and clean up. I make sure there's not a single drop of blood in the room and dispose of the leftover body parts any way I could. No evidence remaining, no questions asked. In fact, I can never ask any questions. I just get paid to do my job and go home like it's nothing. It's a sick job, but they would pay me very good. But all that would change one night when I started to finally question my morality. It was one night when they called me to do a job. It's always at the same location, which is 40 miles from where I live in a rundown warehouse. I was called to clean up a room, which really was no problem at all, but I noticed or barely caught on to something that I never thought twice about. As I was cleaning the room that was covered in blood, I saw a small picture on the floor. I picked it up, and it was a picture of a little girl, probably around 14 years old. This made me think right away that this was probably the victim whose blood I was cleaning up just now. It gave me an uneasy feeling inside, and for the first time kind of disturbed me just for the fact that these people are now using kids as their victims. But again, this was a job where no questions are asked. I put the picture in my pants pocket and continued cleaning. Once I was done, I packed up my things and quickly got out of the warehouse. I went inside my car and instantly I got a call. It was them. They always call private. I answered and they asked me if I was done cleaning up. I told them yes and that I had just gotten into my car. They then told me that they left the money inside my glove compartment while I was inside cleaning, and they'll probably have another job for me in the next 2 days since they have a customer who's already waiting. I knew I shouldn't have done this, but I decided to ask how old she was, referring to the victim. They hung up the call. I'm sure they were pissed just with me asking. I didn't know if I could continue doing these types of jobs anymore, but I didn't know how else I would get out of this without some possible threat to my life. I got the picture of the little girl and put it resting on the passenger side. I went home that night contemplating everything. It was the next day around 9 o'clock at night when I got a private call. I knew it was them and I was tempted not to answer, but I did anyway. They gave me the same location again and to be there around 4 a.m. tonight. This time, no questions asked. Juan Miguel Santos of 3905 N 16th Street. The call hung up. This was a clear threat. Just do my job and get out of there. I would need to leave town the next morning and disappear after this. I arrived at the location and saw there was an old Grand Marquis parked outside. Usually there shouldn't be any cars but mine at the location, and got worried that maybe these people are keeping a close eye on me. I stepped outside my car and walked slowly inside, feeling more and more paranoid with each step I took. The hallways were darker than before, and I saw light come from the room I was supposed to go in. I entered inside and my eyes couldn't believe what they had just seen. There was a girl in the middle of the room, tied up and gagged to a chair. Alive. The job wasn't done yet, but then I saw the body of a man laying right on the floor next to the girl that looked to be around 16 years old. The girl began to scream at me, and I started freaking out even more. I ran to the man on the floor and checked his pulse. He was gone. This was the man that was going to kill this girl since I saw a scalpel on his right hand. I walked myself outside into the hallway and immediately got a call, private. It was them. Is everything okay? They knew something was up. They also had cameras in the hallways, but not in the rooms. They must have seen that I was nervous. Yes, everything's okay. Finish the job and get out. We'll leave the money in your car. They hung up, but I knew they knew something was wrong. I went back inside the room and the girl was yelling at me to help her with the gag in her mouth. I didn't know what to do. I needed to dispose of her body, but that meant I needed to kill her first. I looked around inside the man's bag and he had several weapons and tools inside, presumably to use to torture the girl. I pulled out a power drill and turned it on. The girl started to scream even more, telling me to stop. She was crying her eyes out. I aimed the power drill at her face and more tears started to run down her face. I put the power drill down. I couldn't do it. I took off her gag and asked what had happened. She told me that the man just fell on the floor and seemed like he had a heart attack. You know that I can't let you out of here. These are dangerous people and there are cameras everywhere inside this building. We both looked around the room. What about him? Asked the girl. I looked at the man and saw he had a hoodie. I took it off and gave it to the girl. Put this on and cover yourself and run as far as you can away from here. I'm scared. What if they find me? The girl said. I looked inside the man's pockets and found some car keys. They must have been for the car that was parked outside. Here, take these keys. I think the car that's parked outside belongs to him. Whatever you do, do not go to the police. They will find you and they will kill you. just go as far away from here as possible. Before she left, I asked for her name, and she said it was Crystal and that she was 17 years old. I was scared for her. I knew they might have even been outside waiting for me to finish. Before she stepped outside, I looked around the lot to see if it was clear for her to go. There were only but two cars outside, and she quickly ran to the marquee. She said thank you and took off. I went back inside and quickly got my things. My phone started to ring. It was them. I ignored it and quickly ran to my vehicle. As soon as I was to take off, a car was approaching from behind me. The car parked right behind me, and two men in masks stepped out. Not only that, but they opened the back seat of the car and took out Crystal. They caught her. They knew everything we had done. I should have taken off. One of the men took out a gun, pointed it at me, and told me to step outside my vehicle. I stepped out and they wanted for me to go inside. They took me and Crystal into the room with the client's dead body. I knew what they were going to do to us. Crystal couldn't stop whining and moping. This is what happens when you try and be a hero. I needed to do something before we would be dead bodies right next to the one that's already on the floor. I saw that Crystal was right beside the switch to the lights. I looked at her and signaled my eyes to the switches to turn them off. The moment Crystal turned off the lights, I ran towards one of the masked men. Gunshots fired as the men were yelling to turn on the lights. I grabbed the power drill that was on the floor and drilled it right into the man's chest. I stuck the drill all the way in and didn't stop till I heard the man gurgling, choking from his own blood. I got off him and heard Crystal breathing hard and yelling. I turned on the lights and witnessed Crystal stabbing the other masked man repeatedly with a scalpel in the face. Half of his mask was gone from the punctures. I got Crystal and told her to stop. She was frightened, terrified. She hugged me tight and began to cry. Both of us had made it out alive this time. We walked over to my car and took off, both of us covered in blood. The sun was coming out as it was already 6:30 in the morning. We both needed to change our identities, and I knew a guy who could do it that I met from jail, and drove over to his place right away. Sometimes I do think that maybe it would have been better off if both of us were dead, since we would now have to live in fear for the rest of our lives. Luckily, I haven't heard or seen of anything, but you never know. These people always manage to find you. Let's hope they don't catch me now, or for the rest of my life.